KALW.
When I get on stage, I try to remember that when a tree falls in this forest, in this room, that there are other people out there who are going to hear it.
When live music venues closed for safety reasons, touring musicians lost their social and professional networks.
Musicians are creative, so they've figured out other ways to sort of get music to people and sometimes get paid in the process, but it's very different. And one of those is through live streaming.
Today on Cross Currents, we meet a musician who's keeping his artistic spirit going. Then a local skating legend finds rhythm on the skateboard and on the bass.
It just, for some reason, just struck a chord with me. No pun intended.
And some local singles have been missing sex and intimacy during the pandemic.
I haven't had so much as a handshake in 3 weeks.
That's coming up. I'm Henat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today, we're starting with a story from our series, At Work, looking at how COVID has changed our jobs.
I have a lot of pride in my work.
How do you do it?
Sprays, masks, gloves.
I'm with the Swamp Team.
Hi, my friends, and how are you?
It's nice now with technology.
Pandora's box has been opened.
It's a beautiful way to make your living, but it's more work than I ever imagined.
Quarantine has left many people starved for connection, emotional or physical. For musicians like Zach Moses Ostroff, that connection is essential to his work. In the latest installment of our At Work series, we meet a touring musician whose main source of income has been cut off because of music venue closures.
Oh, you guys all know this one, okay?
The last show Zach Moses Ostroff played with his band Big Butterfly was at the Ivy Room in Albany.
It was a bit crazy because it was less than a week before lockdown and people were already kind of starting to shelter in. So there was a very small turnout at that show.
But he still played his heart out.
I can't do anything except 100% of my energy when I'm on stage, no matter how many people are there. So for the folks who were there, I think it was a pretty weird and special night because we all had this feeling of paranoia that maybe this could be the last show that we see for a little bit. It was this strange, like, you know, night before the storm kind of feeling.
That show happened on a Wednesday, and by the end of that week, the storm had hit. Live music venues across the Bay Area had shut down.
It was just a crazy thing to think all of a sudden everything was just going to come to a standstill. No matter how much time, money, or effort had been invested in any of these performances or recording sessions. And then they just all turned off like a light switch.
Zach, a touring professional musician, wears a lot of hats, as artists often do.
I'm a musician, producer, film composer, and environmental communications expert.
But his primary source of income was playing music live, like that show at the Ivy Room. So now he's had to hustle for other work.
Musicians are creative, so they've figured out other ways to sort of get music to people and sometimes get paid in the process. But it's very different, and one of those is through live streaming.
A lot of musicians have taken to social media to play concerts or share snippets of music. It doesn't pay nearly as much, and it just doesn't have that same appeal for Zach as a performer.
You're playing to your camera on your phone, most likely, staring at yourself in the camera and feeling nothing except yourself in a room by yourself, but seeing comments and heart emojis, and that's it. It feels like you're playing and the music is like escaping and not coming back to you. And I personally hate that.
And Zach says having a live audience in the same room actually affects the way he plays.
It's not like you're playing for people, it's you're playing with them, you know? And that the energy is coming back from them when you're playing on the stage. If people are into it, you're gonna play better. If people are falling asleep, you're gonna feel like you're doing a worse job and play worse. If people are clapping, you can choose as a musician to hold your ground with the tempo or actually go to the tempo of the audience's clapping rhythm.
Even from a physical standpoint, everything just sounds different when you're playing to a room full of people.
Because human bodies, when there's a lot of them in a room, absorb sound in a really nice way. It's kind of strange to talk about it that way, but that's what happens.
And that's what a lot of us are missing right now in quarantine. We see each other on Zoom or FaceTime, but we don't get to feel each other's physical presence. And Zach says that's so important to him as a musician.
When I get on stage, I try to remember that when a tree falls in this forest, in this room, that there are other people out there who are going to hear it. And that that means something, and that those people matter, and that they, you know, went through whatever they did that day to finally make it to that show, where now it's my job to give them something to feel. And I love that.
Despite all this, Zach's been finding hustles everywhere he can. He's been producing other artists' records remotely from his home in Marin, and he's teaching too, but that's presented its own problems.
It was a learning curve for me as much as for them, because when you're not able to walk around a person playing bass, as an example, with a bow, you know, it's like you're missing a whole lot of data to understand what's actually happening. Plus, their sound is coming through a laptop microphone, out your laptop, so it sounds nothing like it does in the room. It's really difficult to teach that way.
He's had to rethink his teaching strategy, and he's learned to give clearer directions. It's like he needs more data or points of information to teach accurately that he just doesn't have right now. And the one thing he can't teach is what he misses most, improvising. And Zach thinks that's especially hard on jazz musicians.
That genre and that culture and that community is inherently based on performing live with other people in a room, improvising together, creating together, feeling together, moving together. And that is impossible right now in any remotely safe or, you know, legal way.
So he's making do on his own.
Because I was like, well, shoot, if I don't have any gigs, I may as well do something with my time and record an entire thing by myself.
And that's exactly what he did. He recorded a full cover of Palco, a song by Brazilian songwriter Gilberto Gil. He did most of the instruments and vocals himself. And he brought in some housemates in his pod to help, specifically his mom and sister. For now, Zach's recording process is limited to his house, away from a live audience and away from that connection that he loves. The feedback the crowd gives him and the energy he gives in return.
And that's just something that now more than ever, I'm so starkly aware of. Because when else do you become aware of something better than when it's not there?
For Cross Currents, I'm David Exumé.
David is a fellow in our Audio Academy training program. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Now we're going to meet another musician who's been keeping busy during the pandemic. Tommy Guerrero released his new album, Sunshine Radio, earlier this year. Tommy's been releasing solo instrumental albums for over 20 years, but he may be even more well-known as a professional skateboarder. Back in the 80s, he was a member of the legendary teen pro skating team, Bones Brigade Crew. In this interview from a couple of years ago, he talks about how he got his start.
Growing up here in San Francisco, you know, you're really informed by your environment, by your surroundings. And there's so much culture and creativity and revolution just in the mud in the Bay Area that it's going to come out, you know, at some point. We're just a vehicle, right? And so, you know, I think I'm just echoing what's already taken place, but with my own voice. This is Tommy Guerrero. I'm a former professional skateboarder. I rode for the Bones Brigade during the 80s, and I'm also a musician. I've been playing music since I was about 12 or 13. I grew up playing punk music in the city with my brother and friends, and it just went from there. I started doing all the DIY solo recordings when I was about 19. I bought a four-track and a drum machine, had a bass and guitar, and off I went. I grew up listening to all types of music in the early years. You know, when I was a kid, my family would play all types of different music around the house. I had a cousin who was, I don't know, a handful of years older than me, so he kind of introduced us to a lot of stuff. But he listened to a lot of local stuff, Tower Power and Sly Stone. And then I remember they listened to, like, Elton John a lot. But I just remember as a very young kid, and I was in a car, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6, Booker T and the MGs' Green Onions came on the radio. It just, for some reason, just struck a chord with me. No pun intended. And it just stayed with me for the rest of my life, to this very day. I mean, I'm a huge Booker T fan. So maybe that had something to do with where I'm at now musically.
1, 2, 3, 4!
The idea that I transitioned into being a musician is sort of false, in the sense that I started playing music, I think, when I was around 12 with my brother. We really got into the punk scene in San Francisco when it came, and we seen the Ramones in front of City Hall, I think it was 79, when they played for free, and that just changed everything for me. I really wanted to be part of it, you know, just the energy of the punk music movement. And so we started a band. And of course, you know, like punk rock, you just pick it up and you just do it. There was no lessons involved or anything. We all had crappy instruments. And so I've been playing for almost as long as I've been skating. Growing up in the Bay Area, in San Francisco, you know, it's really diverse. It's really eclectic. And so hearing all the music coming out of here and just actually everywhere, you know, and all the new movements coming in with the punk movement. And then from the punk movement, I shifted more into metal. But at that same time, around the early 80s, hip hop was coming out from the East Coast and making its way. And, you know, there's like Crush Groove and those movies made it out here. And so I really started getting into hip hop. And it was strange for friends of mine who are, you know, metalheads. And I'm like also listening to hip hop. And so my friend Chuck, he lives in Philly, and so he would send me these mixtapes from the radio. And so I was simultaneously like listening to all this heavy stuff, but also hip hop. But there's an aspect of like punk and all of that that are very similar. And it's the same thing with hip hop, where it was all out of necessity, DIY, out of I need to make music, and however that's gonna be, it's gonna be it. Whether it's 2 turntables or whether it's a guitar and an amp in a garage. So in the very early 90s, I got a sampler, a keyboard, this big, huge beast of a thing, an Emacs, and I had, I think, 20-something second sampling time on the lowest resolution. And but what I was doing is, you know, you're searching for breaks in old records, old funk records, jazz records, whatever. I would sample, like, some of the beats, and then I would play on top of it. So that's kind of how my whole thing started, playing bass and guitar and whatever else, and creating these more, you know, I like to think of like hip hop, they create the audio collage out of disparate elements, right? A sound here, from there, et cetera, and they create something new. They give it new life and new context, which is really interesting to me. So hip hop really got me into producing the way that I produce and have been for many years. People always ask me like correlation between music and skating, and really skating is very rhythmic. And it's funny because, as you know, in the 90s, every single skate video was pretty much hip-hop, which makes sense. It's extremely rhythmic, you know, and skating is as well. I was around 19 when I turned pro, and I couldn't be in a band anymore because I traveled too much, but I still had the desire to play music. I mean, there was no way I was going to not play. So in between times being on tour, I would hook up with an old friend of mine, Chuck Treese, who I still play with to this day. And we'd, you know, rent a studio. I'd be in town for the day or for the night and rent a studio and jam out. And so I've been just trying to maintain some level of playing throughout my life. Bands are very hard to keep together. You know, I've tried and it just didn't seem to work out. So I figured, you know, out of necessity, I need to be creative. And music and, you know, and bass guitar, et cetera, those are my tools to be creative. When I sort of pulled back from being a pro skater, which was difficult because that was my identity at the time, and that's what I had been doing forever, you know, I mean, I've been skating almost my entire life, it feels like, that I've, you know, I think I was falling back on music more because it was fun, you know, just making beats, making instrumental music. And how that stuff happened was I had some rappers who wanted some beats. I made beats for them, and they just didn't come through with the raps. It didn't work out. And I had instrumental beats, and so I was like, I need a voice. So I started playing guitar. That was basically the voice. There's people who do say that my music reminds them of California, that it invokes this idea of California and this easygoing sort of sunny state, right? Which is, you know, growing up in San Francisco, I grew up in the avenues, it was always foggy. And so it's interesting, you know, I can't say that I've ever approached music that way, but like I said, I think I'm just being informed by what's around me and what's already happened. And I'm just a conduit.
That was San Francisco musician Tommy Guerrero talking with us back in 2019, right after his project Dubtoons dropped. Earlier this year, he released his newest album, Sunshine Radio. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. It's been nearly a year since we were first ordered to shelter in place in the Bay Area. At times, it can be frustrating for various reasons, including sexually. Some singles have been struggling through a long dry spell. They're refraining from physical intimacy to prevent getting infected with the coronavirus. Last year, after we first started to socially distance, KLW's Janae Darden asked singles how they were coping without touch during the shutdown. And a quick warning, this story is not suitable for young children.
After having observed your behavior this evening, I was wondering if you would like to have sex.
This is a scene from the 90s sci-fi action film Demolition Man. The year is 2032, but Sylvester Stallone plays a cop from the past. Sandra Bullock gives him a head device for virtual sex, then sits far across from him.
All right, obviously, what do you say we just do it the old-fashioned way?
Ew, disgusting. The rampant exchange of bodily fluids was one of the major reasons for the downfall of society. After AIDS, there was NRS. After NRS, there was UBT.
And in 2020, we have COVID-19, where some people aren't doing it the old-fashioned way. Social distancing means keeping all parts of you at least 6 feet away, which is tough when you're sheltering in place solo. Kim Carter is someone who relates to this. She's divorced and lives in her Sacramento apartment with her two adorable cats. Kim misses her pre-pandemic sex life.
I haven't had so much as a handshake in 3 weeks, and that's been really hard for me because I'm somebody who thrives off of touch and affection.
Kim tells me she is in her early 40s and her sexual prime. She dates and has a lover, but doesn't want to risk her health inviting him over.
There is no solution to this. We have to stay away from people, and so there's no way I can touch another person.
Or even kiss, because the virus is found in saliva and mucus. That's according to a sex guide from the New York City Health Department. It says while COVID-19 so far hasn't been found in vaginal and semen fluids, it has been detected in feces. And the health department recommends you stick to having sex with the partner or partners who live with you. But they say your safest sex partner is yourself, with clean hands. That's right, masturbation.
I can say in the bedroom, I've been taking care of business with my vibrator, and you know, that's great, but it's not the same.
People in Kim's situation are reaching in their sex toy chest for satisfaction. Manufacturers have seen significant increases in online sales. Carol Queen is the staff sexologist for the sex store Good Vibrations. She says they've also seen an uptick in toys and hear about people being sexually frustrated. I ask her, why is sex on our minds during a crisis?
I think there's the, wow, this is all scary. What might make me feel better? And also there's the, hey, I've got all this time to myself. How am I going to move through this time? And that's another reason to think about sex, or at least masturbation.
But she says people still want connection, which is happening virtually. People are hosting sex parties on Zoom, having phone sex with others they meet on dating apps or with long-distance lovers, and they're getting kinky with video calls. Kim Carter says that using these digital platforms to connect with her lover does make a difference.
Sometimes we send some X-rated stuff because we can't be with each other and be X-rated. So it's just to keep spirits up and let them know I'm thinking of them, and I get the same in return.
Carol says there's high-tech sex toys and apps that can make the connection even stronger.
You and your partner across town or in the next room or, you know, across the country can use an app-mediated toy so that your partner can turn up the buzz for you. I'll always think of you inside of my private
thoughts. Can't imagine you touching my private thoughts. Sure, the toys and apps help when you're turned on, but Kim reminds me that in times like this, you also want another form of intimacy.
If I had my druthers, I would be hugging somebody through this, you know? Somebody would be hugging me and rubbing my back and telling me it's okay, and I don't have that. I have nothing. I live alone, and, you know, I've got two cats, and they're cute and everything, but, like, that's not the kind of affection I need.
Carol Queen says Kim's yearning for physical touch makes sense given the pandemic.
You know, we're worried about each other, we're nervous about ourselves, and including real respect for erotic feelings and experience is one of the ways some of us will get through this. But it does give us the feels. You know, it opens the door to our hearts sometimes, doesn't it? And some of our hearts are heavy right now.
But Carol also sees this as an opportunity for growth and to learn more about our sexual selves.
There are definitely big pluses to taking a little bit of your quarantine time and figure out who you are on that intimate level. It's okay to have pleasure, even in a time that's scary.
Kim and I are wrapping up our call. She wants to make a drink before joining an online happy hour. She's still connecting with people. Her friend hooked her up on a virtual blind date.
She said, there's this guy I've always thought that you two would make a good couple. Since we have so much time on our hands, can I give him your number so you guys can get to know each other? And I said, sure.
And Kim has one final thought.
But it is hard being alone, so don't forget about your friends that are single and alone. They need love too.
In the meantime, until it's safe for us to touch new people with consent, singles like Kim will have to keep buzzing along. In Oakland and single too, I'm Janae Darden for Cross Currents.
Since Janae first reported that story last year, Kim met someone who she shares her COVID bubble with. You can find more stories about how people are coping during the pandemic and subscribe to the Cross Currents newsletter at KALW.org. And before we go, here's some new music from a local artist. This is Ceremony from Rohnert Park. Their album, In the Spirit World Now, was on Bay Bridge Best of 2020 list.
We'll be right back.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Annalise Finney, Andrew J.M. Garcia, Lisa Morehouse, and Marissa Ortega Welch. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shirin Adil. Managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.